Alphonsus now. They've won the first round, Doug realized. They aimed at our nuclear generator and hit it. Our backup power system is gone. There must be a considerable amount of radioactive debris splattered across the far side of the crater floor. But they don't suspect we've got a beam gun to knock out their nuke, he told himself. Almost bitterly, Doug admitted that their big success so far had been that Wixon's beam gun hadn't worked. Our ace in the hole, he thought wryly. They don't know we might be able to prevent their nuclear warhead from going off. He leaned back in the squeaking little chair, trying to ease the stress that was knotting the muscles of his neck and shoulders. Nanomachines can't relieve anxiety, he thought. Staring up at the dimly lit rock of the ceiling, Doug asked himself, "Who am I trying to kid? There are at least 300 armed and trained troops on the other side of the ring wall. A nuclear bomb is heading toward us. Not a nation in the world has lifted a finger to help us. How on earth can I pretend that we can stand up to the peacekeepers? We don't have a chance, not a prayer, against the force of the United Nations. Why not just let them walk in here and take over? Why risk the lives of 2,000 people over what? My own ego? My own fear that once they ship me Earthside, some new morality fanatic's going to murder me? So what? I'm dead either way. They can kill me here trying to defend Moonbase or kill me back on Earth. At least if I surrender to them, the rest of the people here will live. And Moonbase dies. Yamagata takes over and turns it into his private clinic instead of using it as a springboard to push the frontier outward. He shook his head. You're debating philosophy when a couple of thousand lives are hanging in the balance. That's not fair. It's stupid. The phone light at the bottom right corner of his set of screens began winking yellow. Shaking himself from his inner misgivings, Doug reached for his headset and slipped it on. Incoming call from Savannah, a Comtech's voice said. Urgent top priority. Put it through. Doug saw his mother's face on the lower right screen, hair disheveled, eyes red and swollen, skin ashen, a silk robe pulled tight around her. What's wrong? He blurted. But Joanna was already telling him.
Lev's been killed, murdered. He was trying to kill me, but I'm all right. But your stepfather's dead.
Killed? Who did it? Why? Are you really all right? The 3 seconds it took for her reply stretched like hours.
We don't know who it was. The security guard got him. We're checking it out. It all happened just a few minutes ago.
Joanna seemed to be gasping, her words barely getting out of her mouth. Are you hurt? Do you have a doctor there? She's holding back tears, Doug realized, watching his mother's agonized face. She won't let herself cry.
Paramedics are here, and my personal physician's on his way, she said, seeming to pull herself up straighter. I'm not hurt. But Lev...
Joanna turned away from the screen. A man's face slid into view, square jaw unshaved, narrow eyes hard and bitter. This is Captain Ingersoll. I'm with Masterson Security. Your mother's physically unharmed, sir, although she's had a tremendous psychological shock. I'll see to it that she calls you back as soon as her doctor's looked her over and we've had a chance to sort things out a bit. Thank you. The screen went blank. Doug sat there in stunned silence. If anyone overheard his phone conversation, if anyone tried to talk to him or question him, he didn't know it. He merely sat staring blankly at the array of screens, his thoughts spinning. They tried to kill her. Who was it? Part of Foray's scheme? Or maybe Yamagata, trying to get her out of their way so they can take control of Masterson Corporation more easily? No, not even Yamagata would go that far. Would they? New morality zealots, more likely. Fanatics who knew that Mom was backing Moonbase and nanotechnology. Maybe they even knew she'd had a few nanotech treatments herself over the years. She's all right, though. Lev's dead, but she's all right. They murdered Lev. Killed him. Jenny Anson was shaking his shoulder.
Wix is ready to power up.
He looked up at her. Okay, he said dully. Okay. Anson peered at him.
Are you all right, Doug?
He nodded. Yeah, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. Tell Wixon to shoot the hell out of that missile. Anson looked surprised. But she said merely,
"Right." Claire Rossi looked up as the overhead loudspeakers blared through the cave. "We're going to auxiliary power in 60 seconds. Lights will go down to emergency levels. All unnecessary equipment will be powered down. This should last approximately 10 to 15 minutes." The cave buzzed with conversations. When the lights suddenly turned down, a chorus of oohs surged through the crowded cafeteria. Then somebody called out, "The lights are low. Time for an orgy." Claire didn't laugh. Neither did anyone else. The lights flickered briefly in the nano-laboratory, then steadied and returned to their normal brightness.
"See," Zimmerman said to Inoguchi, "we are essential. We stay at full power."
Inoguchi looked up from his work. "I am afraid that the power surge has knocked out the timing circuitry in the assembly feeder," he said apologetically.
"What?"
Zimmerman bellowed, rushing across the lab to the Japanese scientist's side.
"The timing circuitry must be reset," Inoguchi said. "This batch of nanomachines..."
"Ruined!"
Zimmerman roared, pounding a fist on the lab bench so hard that Inoguchi nearly jumped off his stool.
"A microsecond pulse of electricity! Ruined!"
He lapsed into German. Inoguchi could not understand his words, but the tone was painfully clear.
"Power at 92%.
Wixon was inside the cramped shelter again. This time he had not bothered to take off his helmet. He merely slid the visor up. "Can you goose it higher?" he asked, eyes on the makeshift control board.
"When I do," the woman replied, "the needle starts wobbling. I think 92's the best we can do without risking another shorting out."
"Okay," Wixon said softly. "Hold it at 92.
"Holding it stable."
"How's the radar plot?" The man standing to his left was bent over a screen that displayed a single lurid red spot against a spider web of concentric circles. "Coming straight at us, practically zero deflection," he said tightly. "Pointing systems holding good, slave to the radar." Wixon scanned the board full of gauges and telltale lights, mostly green, a handful of ambers. Two reds, but they had been cut out of the circuitry. "Anybody see a reason why we shouldn't shoot the cannon?" Dead silence. No sound in the low-ceilinged little shelter except the hum of the electrical equipment. "Okay, here goes." Wixon leaned on the red firing button. Nothing in the shelter changed. No new noise, no vibration, no sense of having accomplished anything.
"Power holding steady."
"Beam collimation looks good."
"Just hold together, baby,"
Wixon pleaded, almost cooed, like a father urging a baby's first tottering steps.
"Just stay together for another 5, 6 minutes. You can do it, baby. You can last that long. You're a good little pile of junk, you are. You're working just fine. Keep it up, baby. Keep those protons moving."
His assistants had never heard Wixon speak like that. Never heard anything remotely like this cooing, coaxing, imploring tone that he was half-whispering, half-singing to the impassive electronics and machinery they had slapped together. They stood in shock for fully 5 minutes as Wixon kept up his impromptu lullaby, his supplication, his prayer that the beam gun would work right and do the job they intended it to do. As the clock on their control board showed 5 minutes and 9 seconds, Wixon's female assistant called out,
"Starting to get arcing on the main bus."
Wixon raised one hand in a gesture of patience.
"It's going to short out again."
"Hold it as long as you can," he said calmly. Half the needles on the board's gauges suddenly spun down toward zero. "It's gone," said the man to Wixon's right.
"Main bus shorted."
"Power down," Wixon said with a sigh. "If we haven't knocked out the nuke's fusing circuitry by now, we never will." A small tremor shook the shelter, like the passing of a train nearby.
"Ground impact."
"Yeah, but did the nuke go off?" Assault force. Colonel Giap studied the watch built into the keypad on his spacesuit's wrist. The nuclear bomb should have exploded almost a full minute earlier.
His command center inside the tractor was little more than a windowless metal box shoehorned between the tractor